I'll call to order the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Colleagues, today is February 15th, 2012, and we are convened for the purposes of a public hearing and work session on House Bills 4034 and House Bills 4117. Of course, we want the public to participate as much as possible. However, for those of you who are in the lobby, keep in mind that there could be an inverse relationship between the amount of testimony and the chances of this bill actually passing. So if there's concision, will be rewarded, I guess, is what I would like to say. However, if
Mr. Chair, brevity is the soul of wit. I remember somebody said that. So.
Right. So
I don't know if Representative Witt is listening.
So that being said, I will open up a public hearing on the prompt payment bill, House Bill 4034. Jan, could you tee it up for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. The bill changes the applicable interest rate for a contractor's failure to make a timely payment in accordance with a public improvement contract to 9% per annum. Requires that a public improvement contract obligate a contractor to provide the first-tier subcontractor with a standard payment claim form, and that the contractor use the same form and the regular administrative procedures to process the payments during the entire term of the contract. Permits a contractor to change the form if the subcontractor is notified of the change. Establishes the operative date 91 days after the measure's effective date. Declares an emergency. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact. You have testimony submitted prior to the hearing by Dave Cutts in support. He's not able to attend. The bill passed the House floor on a 59-0 vote.
All right. Do we have the sign-up sheet?
Yes.
Can we bring up Rick Thomas, John Rakowitz, and Brian Creek?
And I heard a great statement, Mr. Chair, yesterday from Senator Beyer. I'm a yes, unless you keep talking.
You missed the brevity as to that effect already.
Yeah. You were there, weren't you? Yeah.
Welcome to the committee.
For the record, my name is Rick Thomas, representing Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon. Here this morning in support of House Bill 4034. The administrator, I think, did a great job of talking about the bill itself, so I'll just be brief and mention that this is a big issue for the industry. Payment terms was an issue that was before this committee last session, a bill that did pass to the Senate floor that had a little bit of controversy. I think the controversial pieces have been removed from that original legislation. I think it's a great example of industry working together on getting this bill into a form that we can all support. And I think we'll hear from some of the other groups as well as to the work that we've done to kind of get it to this point. But payment terms have been an issue for the industry, especially on public projects. The interest penalties that are added to this, we think, are a valuable piece in terms of speeding that process up, creating an incentive for people to pay their bills on time.
Thank you, Rick. John?
Good morning, Chair Shields, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC Associated General Contractors. I ditto everything that Rick Thomas just said. It's a good bill. It should pass. It's important to our industry, and we're all in agreement. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Brian?
Chair Shields, member of the committee, my name is Brian Krieg, today representing the Sheet Metal Air Conditioning Contractors Association, the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association, and the workers of Sheet Metal, Worker 16, and IBEW. This is a great group effort between many organizations to put this together. Back over a decade ago, I was actually the one who put together the first draft for the prompt pay bill. Things have changed in the industry, and we need to have some adjustments and changes to this to update the law. This will do it, and it will be a big help for our contractors and our workforce.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, gentlemen. Could we please bring up Nathan Phillips, Daryl Fuller, and John Mullis.
Good Morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nathan Phillips. I'm an electrical contractor in Eugene, and I just wanted to briefly tell you that contractors, all construction contractors, work on very slim margins, probably less than 5% average, considerably less. We are withheld retainage on all our public works projects of 5%, which means that we have an immediate cash flow problem on every job. General contractors can sometimes solve this cash flow problem by withholding payment to subs. Subs have to borrow the money. And interest rates today, even in the low interest rate environment for lines of credit for contractors, are 6-7%. When the penalties are less than that, that creates an incentive for some generals to not pay promptly. So this bill is an attempt to redress that. The other technique that is often used is to change payment form requirements in the middle of the job so that you submit your payment on the form that was provided at the beginning of the job, and suddenly that form is no longer the right form, and that they use that technique to delay payment for up to 60 to 90 days. So this bill also has provisions that prevent that kind of abuse. We urge passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Daryl.
Daryl Fuller, testifying in support of the bill on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well done.
John. Good morning, Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is John Mullis. I represent the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. Our members work for signatory contractors. We're in favor of the bill, support the efforts that all sides brought to the table, and we appreciate the fact that the contractors will be paid more promptly, which will allow those contractors to pay our workers, pay their benefits, stay in business, and hopefully turn a profit. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, gentlemen. Anybody else like to testify on this?
Is there, Mr. Chair, anybody from LOC or public entities, since it does affect the, in the way I read the bill, obviously, I'm assuming that our public entities want to make sure and pay their bills on time, but I'm just curious if we have any testimony from AOC or LOC or how, what was their involvement in the bill?
I believe that they have no objection to this. This was primarily negotiated amongst the industry. And they would, I'm sure they wouldn't be shy about letting us know.
Well, come on, Bosha.
But your point's well taken. This obviously affects municipalities and counties. Senator George, we just heard testimony on House Bill 4034. Everyone sing in six-part harmony in support of the bill.
I was listening upstairs.
Would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Donna, would you please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Yes.
Senator Dingfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. The motion carries, and I'll be the carrier on that one. I will close the... Do we open the work session?
I don't... I thought of that halfway through the roll call. Your entrance threw him off.
Exactly.
That's it.
Let's unwind this a little bit.
I didn't know you were in the military, Chair. We rehearsed this before we were actually going to do it.
I didn't listen.
So we are still in a public hearing, basically. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4034, and I will open a work session on House Bill 4034. My apologies. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Donald, would you please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Yes.
Senator Dingfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries, and I will be the carrier. I will close the work session on House Bill 4034 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4117. Jan.
Hi, Mr. Chair, committee members. This bill allows DCBS to regulate those who administer and sell pre-need contracts. It gives greater discretion to the department in setting fees. It caps the Consumer Protection Trust Fund at $2 million. It clarifies who can name a successor certified provider under various circumstances. It clarifies which expenses may be paid out of the earnings of the trust fund, and allows the recalculation of the trust fund balance to be done every 6 months. establishes what constitutes fraud or deceit in the pre-need industry, declares an emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments before you. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact. We have testimony submitted by Rick Bennett representing AARP in support. And the House passed the bill on a 59-0 vote.
Representative Foley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. State Representative Paul Holby for the record, House District 8. And I just had a little bit of extra time this morning and wanted to come and speak to this bill just real briefly. It was a bill that was at the request of the House Interim Committee on General Government Consumer Protection, of which I am one of the co-chairs of. And I know that I made a lot of people nervous by showing up. They were scared I was going to testify on the last bill. They were quite surprised that I was here on this particular bill. This bill was actually introduced last session in 2011, and we could not come to an agreement on the bill with the stakeholders and the agency, and we did have an interim hearing on this subject, and since that time in September, I participated in talking to the stakeholders and DCBS to try to come to some sort of agreement about this issue, which is an important issue about mostly about the trust accounts that are held for pre-need funeral products and the master trustees and other folks who have these trust accounts to make sure the money's there in the time of need, in the time when somebody's died, and they're hoping that their funeral plot is and services that are accompanying to the process are all still there, and that has to do with the trust accounts, and we need to make sure that there's been some cases where those trust accounts have come into question, so the account that's or the consumer fund that's there to help protect that was also something that we were concerned about, whether it was adequate to protect the consumers in case something did go awry, which there's been some issues around these trust accounts in the past. And DCBS needed some sort of mechanism to help oversee these trust accounts and this particular industry. So we worked with this, and I think you'll find all the stakeholders are in agreement with this bill now, and I urge you to pass it. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'm sure there's people with much more expertise on these issues than I.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Could we please bring up David Tetman and John Brenneman?
Mr. Chair, good morning. Members of the committee, my name is David Tatman. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, which is a division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services that Representative Holby just was referring to. Our division is charged with the oversight of pre-need sales activity and those that provide that, what we call certified providers. And you've heard a little bit about the history of this bill. I'm here to try and do this as briefly as possible. I don't think brevity will prove to be the soul of wit in this case, but I will say I'll try and speed through this. You have my written testimony, so I'm not going to go through that in great detail. Each of you or one of your staff members received a one-page handout yesterday to try and reduce this down to just some bullet points, and I'll try and just go over that very briefly. Pre-need activity is just what it sounds like. That is the sale of funeral services in advance of the time of need. And as you can imagine, in many instances, those sales will take place 7, 10, 15, 20 years in advance of when there's a need for it. Given the nature of that activity and given the amount of money involved, it's important that money is protected. That's why we require it to be trusted. and we take that responsibility very seriously, and most of the industry does that also as well. But as you've heard, there are times where if it is not trusted, the temptation is just too great. And in the last 2 years, I keep an eye on this, and in the last 2 years, over the course of the United States, I've seen 15 cases in which trusted money, or money that should have been trusted, ended up being stolen and misused, anywhere from $500,000 upwards to $20 million. And Oregon is not exempt from that problem. A couple of years ago, as Representative Holvey referenced, we had a case out of Albany in which over $400,000 was taken and used by a company for personal use, purchase of real estate, homes, and self-interest. And that meant all the people who had bought these services were without the services, but for that Consumer Protection Trust Fund. So that fund is funded by a $5 fee every time a contract is written for pre-need services. And that takes a long time to build up to any substantial size. Currently, it is at approximately $800,000. That's more than adequate for what we believe we need in any given time. However, you should know the incident I'm referring to, the Twin Oaks case, resulted in over $400,000 in losses. So a large defalcation like that could wipe out the trust quickly. If we had two of those, we would be in dire straits. So this is a preventive measure to make sure, should we get in that situation, we have a way to rebuild that trust fund up, because that is the protection that the consumer has in this situation. A couple of the other bullet points I'll just refer to. One, although we have specific enforcement authority over certain misdeeds and wrongdoing, we don't have general enforcement authority over fraud and deception in the sale of products, and we think that's a critical piece. And in fact, in the division, we have 12, 13 programs, and most of those programs have a general anti-fraud provision. We think it's appropriate in this case as well, and that's what we're asking for. In addition, we want to make sure that everybody that can handle trust funds is licensed and subject to our oversight. So the first bullet point addresses that. There are a number of other provisions, and I'll just defer to if you have questions about that. I will say that we've worked hard with Mr. Brenneman and Ty Cochran, who's here, as well as consumer advocates, as well as Representative Holvey, to come up with what we think is a balanced approach. There's a couple things we've tried to address in here that would allow clarity around what fees can be taken out from that trusted money to administer the trust. We recognize there's costs associated with this, and we think that's a reasonable thing. There's a cap on that as well. So we think there are protections in place for most of the activity that goes on in this area, and I'm happy to speak about those protections or anything else you have, but I understand urgency in getting this resolved. So I'll defer back to the chair and the committee, and unless you have questions or you want to wait till after Mr. Brenneman testifies.
Thank you, David. John.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Brenneman. I represent the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. The Oregon Funeral Directors Association runs a master trust. We have a cross membership. Some of our members in OFDA are members of that master trust. It is in the interest of Oregon Funeral Directors that master trusts remain in pre-need, remain a good viable option for the consumer, something in addition to insurance. And that's our overall goal is to make sure that continues and is a viable consumer option. A few years ago, not this year, but a few years ago, the Master Trust did not make enough income to cover expenses. The result was they borrowed money from OFDA to get them through the year, but that has been an issue that has been really important to the Master Trust people. In the course of the negotiations here, we've come up with an agreement in order to arrive at a way to solve that, and the department has offered that they'll open some rulemaking procedures following this session, and we'll sit in on that, and they're going to help Master Trust be able to have the mechanism to create a reserve account to get them through a lean year should it happen again. But we think we've been listened to. We think we have a good bill here that will continue. This is a safe alternative and one the consumer can use in setting out their pre-need wishes. We urge support.
Great. I do want to ask you, David, if I know that in St. Louis there was a very large case, National Pre-Arranged Services, where they were diverting money from the sale of these kinds of policies to their own personal benefit. If one of our constituents was defrauded in that way, this bill, how would that address that fraud by our constituents, or of our constituents?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'd have to find out what the circumstances were. If the sale took place while they were residents of Missouri, it probably is a Missouri transaction. However, if it took place while it was in Oregon, presumably there's an Oregon nexus, because you have to be licensed to make these transactions in Oregon. If there was that nexus, we would have jurisdiction over them to sanction them and presumably either obtain restitution if they're still in business, or just require the company to honor that, if the company's still in business, or if not, then they would have access to that Consumer Protection Trust Fund. Okay. But I just want to urge caution. It would have to be an Oregon transaction, and it's not clear to me whether that was the case or not.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a weird question. I asked this of David yesterday because it just came up yesterday, and it relates to the relating clause and relates to another bill we've had in the committee. But I want to ask John if he's ever heard of this sort of thing like this, and because not only has he been here a long time before, but in the funeral record registry. And this is kind of the gist of it. Had something come up yesterday in regards to a lady who is now deceased and buried in a funeral plot, used the funeral plot as the security for a mortgage. And, of course, it's being foreclosed upon now, but actually the company didn't use that plot. They found her name and put a lien against another piece of property that's owned by somebody else of the same name, which happens to be the daughter. Have you ever heard in Oregon of anybody foreclosing on a funeral plot?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, I have not, and I've been associated with the funeral industry clear back to 85, my first session in the Senate, when we had an unfortunate situation develop in Lincoln City. And I've just been associated for all those years, but I'm not the expert. You have one in the back of the room that might be able to answer that if he wants to come forward, but if you want him to, but I can't.
I'd be happy to meet with someone after. I'm just trying to find if there's any history here of banks foreclosing on funeral plots. And mind you, this is a real ongoing case right now that just came to my office yesterday. So
well, I'll talk to you Mr. Martinez offline. Senator George.
Mr. Tatman, Section 13 is the section discussed where the department will have some additional authority, especially when it gets around with fraud. But there's several things in there to talk about, you know, anybody who knowingly makes an untrue statement, material fact, engages in the act, practice, or course of business. And so there's some additional regulatory authority in there for the department. And I just kind of wondered how that's implemented and how that regulatory structure is funded within the department. Just so I have an idea of is there an additional fee that I'm not missing in this bill, or that goes in addition to the fund, or is it taken out of the fund? How's the regulation paid for, I guess?
Mr. Chair and Senator George, I'm happy to answer that question. This would, as I would try and make clear, would be a broad application of anti-fraud provisions. First of all, just to talk about how it proceeds, we already have this language in a number of statutes. It's the same language we use, and we use that in conjunction with specific violations. And if we have a pattern or practice, we want to be able to identify that. So device or scheme suggests pattern or practice. We have an enforcement unit. There is no other fee involved. This would be in conjunction with the complaints we already receive. I don't expect this to translate in additional complaints. What I do expect this to do is give us a clear authority to say you have to cease and desist from engaging in this kind of conduct, and if necessary, impose a financial penalty on that. We already have an enforcement mechanism in place. It's 97, I think it's 418, 948. I could be wrong about the number. Don't hold me to that. But there's a very express provision for enforcement activity, and this essentially would just backstop that. So it won't change anything. There's no additional fees. We're not adding any staffing. The legislature has been very clear at this point that where we are in terms of our staff size is where we're going to remain. And so this won't change anything other than to give us one more tool in our toolbox to make sure we can stop what I would say is ongoing practices. It would be where we would use this mostly in the situation where we've got somebody who is doing this multiple times and we want to take strong corrective action, as opposed to a single violation where we'll say, you need to stop doing that, and if you don't, then we'll have to ratchet it up.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Anyone else like to testify on this?
For the record, I would just like to note that the committee received a letter in support from the Cemetery Association of Oregon, signed by J.C. Aubrey.
Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4117 and open a work session on House Bill 4117. Senator George?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4117 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4117 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? O'Donnell, will you please call the roll?
Thank you. Senator Boquist?
Yes.
Senator Dingfelder?
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. This is on its way to the floor, and Senator Monroe will be the carrier on this bill. I will close the work session on House Bill 4117, and colleagues, we are adjourned.
Yay.